Welcome to the Financial Flows Podcast, hosted by Greg and Antonio, who possess over 25 years of combined corporate America's experience and a decade plus of entrepreneurship.
Welcome back to the Financial Flows Podcast, where we talk about all things personal finance, real estate, entrepreneurship, and all things in between. And today is no different. We reached out, we asked y'all for some questions, so go ahead and submit them so we can answer them for you. And we're going to do that today on today's show. So look forward, stay tuned. We're going to talk about technology and real estate. We're going to talk about some retirement planning strategies, debt as a tool for wealth building. We're going to explore all those areas. But before we get into the show, I have to first check in with my main man, Greg, see how he's doing, what's going on in his world. So what's good, Greg? What's up, my brother?
Man, all I can say is time waits for no man. Time been moving, man. And I'm excited about the opportunity to be here with you. You've been on a go. I'm ready to hear some of these updates because you've been doing a lot. But it reminds me that time waits for no one and how quickly it's moving, because you and I have been really struggling with all of the things in 2023, the businesses, and trying to figure out how to make time for everything. And we've learned a lot, but you still find that, wow, there's so much more you have to learn about how to manage time, even when you do a good job with it. And I think that's transparently what we've been talking about, and carving out the time to make space for us to spend this time like we're doing right now. So just for that, man, I'm appreciative in and of itself. So yes, sir. What about you?
And speaking on time, I was in Dallas all last week for a commercial real estate class, and coming back this week, I'm just like playing catch up, man. You don't realize how much stuff gets backed up on you when you're in class 8 to 5, you know, during the week. So now I'm playing catch up now, which I'm not complaining by any means. I asked for this. Like, nobody's making me go to these classes. I'm doing it because I'm learning. You know what I mean? I actually learned a lot last week. It was a market analysis class. So the way I'm looking at it, I'm taking this information, these skills, and I'm going to use it for consulting practice in addition to doing like selling commercial real estate, but I'm also going to do some consulting on the side. So last week I learned where, let's say you're an investor, you're Walgreens, and you want to come into a market. Well, I will be the guy that go do the analysis for you. I find out the demographics, the household income, how much they have disposable income that will go towards drugs or any products in the store. Like, that's the kind of class I went to last week. High level, really good class, a lot of information, but I'm about to be a beast in this commercial space, man. That's my goal, to open up a commercial division of Service First Real Estate. So that's what I'm working towards right now, just getting the knowledge, partnering with people so I could get the actual on-the-job experience, and then going from there. But yeah, man, that's what I did last week, bro. It was amazing. I loved it. I loved every part of that class. And I'm going to continue to go through with the CCIM progression. That's what I'm working towards, that designation.
I love it, man. A lot of what you just said is, to me, directly correlated to even some of the stuff we talk about weekly. And I know you and I have joked about different things. You're like, man, I'm not sure about this. It's all economics.
Yep.
It's all economics, right? Understanding the consumer, right? Who the potential clients would be. How do you serve them? What is it that they have from an affordability standpoint? What are their needs? What are their pain points, right? Access. How close in proximity do you want to be to a specific meeting? Like, all of those things.
Oh, that's funny you bring it up, because I thought about you last week as we was going through it, because it's all data. And I have information to, I have access to all that information now. And I still don't know how to use it all the way, but I have access to it now. And it's fire, man. It's a game changer. If you really learn the system and learn how to work it, because there's different pieces all over in one big system. So if I can learn how to really use it, I'm going to be lethal with it, man. Seriously.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Looking forward to it. But outside of that, man, I just got back from, I was showing an 11,000 square foot house. It was super nice, man.
Wow.
It was an old Saints player. He used to play for the Saints. I don't want to name him on here, but you know him. And then there's a Saints player that live across the street, a cornerback for the Saints right now, that lives across, directly across the street from the house. It was a nice house, bro. $3 million they won for it. Not sure if it's worth it, but it was amazing. Nice little experience, you know?
Yeah, right. He's like, hey, I don't know if we're going anywhere with that one, but it's a nice property. Yeah.
Now, yeah, my client liked it. She has the money for it. We'll see what happens, but it definitely went in the IG stories, you know what I'm saying? Had to take a little
I'm going to have to take the look. Check that out.
Yeah. So yeah, man, let's get into the questions. Thank y'all for submitting your questions. We're definitely gonna answer them here. We're gonna try to get through the whole list. If not, we're gonna get through the whole list. Forget that. So let's just go ahead. Let's open it up with number one. Yeah, so I'll open it up. I'll start the question. Feel free if you want to jump in, I'll jump in. It doesn't matter, but both of us get the opportunity to answer. So number one, it says, can you share some unconventional real estate investing strategies that are often overlooked but can be highly effective for wealth building?
Yes. Awesome. I'll share one because I know you're going to take off and run with this one. But one that comes to mind, especially during this market, is seller slash owner finance. So seller slash owner finance relates to a specific real estate strategy, okay? And it's an opportunity for you to gain access or purchase a property in real estate in a technically unconventional way. So the reason why it's unconventional is because ultimately the individual or entity that is selling the property is allowing the buyer to pay them as the seller in installments rather than using a traditional mortgage from a bank. So this does a couple of things. If you're the buyer in this environment, more often than not, individuals that own property, for the most part, high statistic, Antonio might know the specific number, percentage-wise, but a high statistic of those individuals have those properties either in turns through a lender at least 4% or below, and in some cases have been able to pay out their debt altogether. So for them, they are controlling the property. In this environment, you as the buyer have an opportunity to access that property. But in those cases, you would not be, I want to repeat this, in those cases, you would not be going to a traditional bank or lender and applying for a mortgage. You would ultimately be allowing the seller to be the bank, and you are paying the seller directly for the home the same way that you would pay the bank, which allows you to have a little bit more flexibility to take advantage of more than likely a lower interest rate than the market would offer you right now. And you don't have the same stringent underwriting processes, even though, of course, they will want to vet you out. But high level seller financing can be a great tool to use to gain access to a property, especially in a highly complex interest rate environment.
And then just to add on to that with seller financing, it's extremely more profitable for you as the buyer when the seller owns the property free and clear, because then they'll be way more willing to work with you. Because think about it this way, you might be thinking, like, why would they want to do that? So if you were to buy the property directly from the seller, they would get a large amount of capital gain, right? And they would have to pay capital gains tax on that large amount,
He
as opposed
cooking.
to if you do the installments like Greg just mentioned, where you're paying them every month. Then they have a smaller tax to pay. So that might be a way to look at it, of a spinoff. So that's why a lot of people like to do it, because they don't want to take that big tax hit. So they'll take the installments, you pay them over time. If you default, then they take the property back. So it's a win-win for
It
everybody. You're
is
getting in at a
definitely.
lower amount, you
Yeah,
know?
it is definitely. I want to go into that a little bit more because quite honestly, this is the beauty of it. You hit into something that I was aware of because of the general knowledge, but I will not say that I was intentional with thinking about it in a strategic approach of leveraging that part as a seller, right? Because I'll take it one step further to your point of having sold properties. That capital gains, it's only one or two ways you can avoid that. Simply put, doing an exchange to a greater property, right? And avoiding that liability, et cetera. But to your point, selling the property, but doing the installment approach also positions you to where technically you're not seen as making a profit, to your point, instantaneously. So that's why you don't get the whole capital gain hit, but that next level of you're lending. So as a lender, you now open yourself up to more tax strategies.
Yep.
That is
And
major.
And you can foreclose on it if they don't pay. Bam. Correct. You're protecting yourself all kind of ways. Definitely a good strategy in this market. I was going to say another one that's similar, but a little different. And it's subject to. So subject to investing. You'll hear a lot of people just call it subject to.
Subject to.
So essentially what it's doing is you're taking, as the buyer, you're taking the home. In your, so you're getting a deed in your name, but you're, the seller is going to keep the financing in their name. So it sounds crazy, right? Like, why would a seller sign over the deed to me and keep the loan on their credit? Well, you never know. People have situations. They're going through things where they might need your help. So in this particular market, you can utilize your strategy best by finding someone who's defaulted on their loan. So they have no way of affording the loan anymore. So either they do some kind of creative financing like we're talking about now, or they risk foreclosure. Which one would you rather have? You don't want to be foreclosed on, so you're probably going to go with this strategy. I know I've never personally done this, but I know people who have done it. And it's a successful strategy if done the right way. If you do explore this, you definitely want to go through a title company. What I've heard and seen to be the best way to do this is you go through a title company where the buyer is making the payments, the monthly payments to the title company. The title company is going to basically put that money in escrow and apply it directly to the monthly payment. So that way the seller is being assured, they'll be notified, but they're being assured that the monthly payment is being handled every single month. The payment, because think about it. If you miss a payment as the buyer, it's going to affect the seller's credit because they're keeping the credit on their loan, the loan on their credit. So it's a win-win for everybody if the seller's in default or going through that situation where they can't afford the payments anymore. So that would be a good opportunity and a good strategy to take advantage of this type of situation. So hope that answers your question. The next question I want to move on to, it says, what are some common psychological barriers to financial freedom and how can individuals overcome them to make more empowered financial decisions? Let me start here, Greg. So this one right here, what I think about when I read this, it's like your mind, right? Your mind is very powerful. And anything you believe in your mind will come to fruition. If you're always thinking in lack, guess what? You're going to get lack. If you always think in the scarcity, you're going to have scarcity. That's just what it is. However, if you think big and like create that positive energy, then positive energy is going to flow to you. I'm a living testament of that. So I believe in affirmations. I said that before. I actually have some printed out right here that I read every morning. I got this out of a book. I don't remember what book it is, but it was a book about money. Maybe The Psychology of Money. I don't remember. But let me just read a couple of them. It says, I love money and I appreciate what it does for me. I am confident in my ability to make money. I am determined to get paid what I'm worth. I am filled with gratitude for the success I've achieved. So it's just a bunch of gratitude and affirmations like this. But I believe in this. I know it sounds corny, but the shit works. Excuse my language. It works. It really does. I'm a testimony. Written. I'm a living testimony of this stuff. I do it every morning. I got a little checklist. I go through my morning routine, and I do it every single morning. I promise you, if you think in lack, you will lack. That's a guarantee. So you have to open yourself up, be more positive, start speaking it into existence. I know a past podcast episode, I had talked about this to Greg, and Greg was like, nah, you're not, I was talking about how I'm not a presenter. And he made me stop that. Like, I got to stop talking like that. Don't talk down on yourself. That the words are powerful. It's in the Bible. I don't remember the quote. I ain't good with the quotes from the Bible, but I know it's in there. And it talks about the tongue. Words, you know what I'm trying to say, Greg.
Absolutely. Life and death is in the power of the tongue.
There you go.
Yeah, for
there
sure.
There you go. So yeah. Speak positivity. Overcome that.
That's a bar. And I think for me, I'll be very just raw with it. Simply put, one of the psychological barriers that many of us have faced and many of us still face today, and I would say it's probably one of the bigger tug of wars. Of course, we can definitely talk to Antonio's part about just mentality and, you know, the belief system and the negative or positive energy, because those things are core concepts to your outcomes. But if we just talk really, really, really practical, the thing that I would say that I've even tried to instill in my children, because I want them to literally, if you hear my voice, I want my children to literally be brainwashed with this statement. You will never be financially free if you continually trade your time for money.
Thanks.
Because you're not even free, right? trading time for money, no matter how it's broken out, is still active income. Yep. And financial freedom cannot be attained and sustained from just active income. So simply put, one of the biggest things that I have to remember even to this day is how do I not trade my time for money? Because that is a mental barrier where I think the only way I can make money is by working this job or doing this thing for this amount of money in exchange, because it limits you in so many different ways. And even if you're talking about business owners, let me tell you something that was said to me, talking to a mentor. And then he connected me with another individual in the space consulting. He's built this firm and all. And we had what was supposed to be a 30-minute like meet and greet and get to know. And it went like an hour and 20. And we was just rolling. And one of the things he said that he learned on a journey is a lot of individuals think that they have a business when they really are just leveraging their expertise. And I was like, what? He said, they think they're a business owner, but they're really just leveraging their expertise. And I was like, wait, unpack that. He said, if you have these skills, this knowledge, this ability, and let's say, you know, you're consulting and you have a client and you're saying, hey, it's, you know, $300, $400, $500, $600 an hour. Okay, cool. But that's not a business because it's only you. It's sole proprietor, right? It's still time for money. And it's not scalable to the magnitude that you think. There's a way to scale it, but that's not the way, because it's just leveraging your expertise to exchange information for money in a time barrier is not an actual business. That was powerful to me, because there are a lot of individuals that operate without that understanding, which is why I'm going back to a mental shift of time for money, because until you understand, the goal is to continue to build the knowledge, the skills, abilities, all of that stuff. And of course, you may have to trade it at some point, but the ultimate goal is to figure out how to maximize that in a way that works in more perpetuity, in equity, and in passivity versus an active earned income.
Yeah, I wish I had known that back in my early 20s, man, because the way I was raised, it was work hard, work hard, work hard, but you need to work smart. So that's something I wish I'd have been right. Books way in my 20s and stuff like that, leveraging these courses and things. But you live and you learn. Now we passing on the information to you. So I hope you out there listener, and you taking heed and you implement some of these things. Moving on to the next question, though. It says, oh, this one easy. How has technology transformed the real estate investment landscape, and what tools do you see as game changers for investors in the coming years? AI, easy. Simple question, simple answer. AI is a beast. I use ChatGPT pretty much every day. It made everything easier. I use it to write email responses, listing descriptions for sure, because that's one, even though it seems like a small task, writing a listing description, I absolutely hate it. So that's one thing I use it for, social media captions, things like that. It just basically allowed me to be more efficient and get more of my time back so I could do other things. And then another app like Zapier, I'm not sure if y'all familiar with that, but basically that's a platform that allows other systems to talk to each other. So for instance, let's say I get somebody that comes into my website, I squeeze them for their information, the information goes in my CRM, then I can have Zapier create a Zap, is what they call it, where now their information is going to go from my CRM to my email newsletter, from my email newsletter to this and to this, you know. So basically it just automates, and like you said, last question, leverage. It allows you to have leverage. So that's what I would say. That's the easy one. Technology, AI, and it's only here to stay. It's only going to get more and more advanced each day as we go by. So that's what I have for that one. Greg, you had anything to add for that one?
Simple things like you think about technology's role in real estate and think about the pandemic. Think about out-of-state investors now. The technological advancements allows for virtual touring. Right? You literally have virtual touring. You have these 3D approaches. What are you thinking about designing? There's so many different things now that is at the click of a button or finger, if you will, that we used to didn't have access to, that makes things much more efficient than it ever has been. So that's a couple of things that comes to mind for me, especially being in an investment mindset. You don't necessarily have to always travel and be boots on the ground to assess multiple properties the way that you used to in the past.
Good point. So, great point. Okay. Next one says, how can individuals diversify their investment portfolios outside of the traditional stock market to achieve more robust financial security? I got this one. Let me start it off. So I got two things. One, you can invest in rental properties. That's my overall, like, that's my retirement plan. I do have your traditional retirement portfolios. But in addition to that, I plan to diversify by having multiple properties paying me cash flow each month. So I'm living off the cash flow of those properties. So that's one way. That's a pretty easy way to get started. You can build that, especially now if you're young, you have time, you can build that up, that portfolio and that cash flow, having it coming into you. The next thing would be opening a self-directed IRA. I think we did a podcast episode on that. Not sure, but
yeah.
I have a self-directed IRA, and what I do with mine is I lend money out of it. So that would be another way, instead of me being 100% in the stock market, investing in mutual funds and individual stocks, ETFs, things like that, I've chosen to take some of that money out, put it in a self-directed IRA, and then I invest in things I know. I know real estate. I know loans because I used to work as a bank examiner. So I take that money and I make loans to individuals that's investing in real estate. So that's just another way to diversify, you know, not being 100% tied to the stock market. So something you can look into.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And I'll keep it really simple as well. You know, truth be told, I'm just going to go ahead and say it, even though it may be controversial to some, because we're talking about financial security. And sometimes there's a sense of volatility that can, you know, spook security. But crypto, you know, cryptocurrency, you think about Bitcoin and Ethereum. I'll just use those two. And, you know, the biggest thing about anything is understanding the long-term growth or upside and the long-term downside or drawdown of any instrument or any asset, right? So like with real estate, you want to think, hey, what's been the appreciation over the last 10 years, 15 and 20? What's been a downside retracement, you know, at its highest or lowest peak, if you will? So that you have a pretty good understanding of your time horizon. And if we're thinking about long-term financial security, then, you know, to me, that diversification is around assets that continually increase in value over time, right? And if you rewind and you think about Bitcoin 8 years ago was sub $6,000 or sub $8,000, I should say. Bitcoin at its worst in the last 30 days is 60,000. So even if it saw a 70% retracement, it'd still be higher than it was 8 years ago. Like, really think about that, right? It's not a lot of assets you can say that about. So I think that's one concept. Do your research. I'm not telling you what to do, but the question was asked. Separately, this one I think is really slept on, life insurance. Universal. Right? An IUL, Index Universal Life Insurance Policy, is a really strategic way to build financial security with almost zero drawdown risk, right? Especially if structured the right way. Got your death benefit. So many different things you can do tied to that. We'll actually have an episode tied, you know, talking through that dynamic. But do your research there, because that's a phenomenal way as well.
Yeah, I think we definitely need to do an episode on that, because that particular topic, there's so many different things you hear about it, right? Like who is different competing things that, like, people are not saying the same thing. So I feel like we need to get an expert on here. We both know an expert. So we're going to have an episode on that, because I feel like that'll clear the air and hopefully it get more people into it that don't understand it. Now, the next question though. So the next question is actually kind of similar to the last question, but it says, how should real estate be incorporated into a retirement planning strategy? And what are the pros and cons compared to other retirement income sources?
So you answered, I said, oh, that's already another question. I'll say it this way, though. Passive income. That's the biggest thing. Passive income. Because what we don't think about and what we don't talk about enough, if you think about Social Security and all these other things, what it really ultimately is a pension plan, right? So just understand that at its core, it's a pension plan, AKA it's an annuity, which means there's a lump sum of money that's paid to you on a month-to-month basis for a specific duration of time, right? That's how it operates. And in retirement, the biggest challenge that individuals usually have is there's not enough fixed income, right, to create the right quality of life, because i.e. inflation and other things. So if your fixed income is $4,000 a month for the rest of your life, and that was good 5 years ago, but now you get to 2024 and everything is extremely expensive and through the roof, and your $4,000 used to live a comfortable life, and now your $4,000 has you trying to figure out how you're going to keep the lights on. That's the challenge. Your income is still fixed, but your expenses are not. So the goal is to have more passive income coming in each month. Rental properties provide you that opportunity. If you see, to Antonio's point, hey, the more rental properties I have, the more cash flow that I have on a month-to-month basis, that becomes another form of AKA a retirement or a pension plan, right? Through that lens. We could also talk about something different, which is the more rental properties you have and you get up in age, depending on how long you had them, you also can draw a line of credit from those, right? And take out some equity. You can refinance and do some things and start really playing a game at a high level, because that's not taxable income, but you could live off that money if you invested another place. We could play the game all day long.
Man, you're stealing my answers, man. Now, here's another thing I think I can mention. So you talked about basically investing in appreciating cash flowing assets, which is great. That's what everybody should be aspiring to do. What I would also suggest is this. Let's say you have 20 years left before you retire. Okay, maybe considering doing an analysis on a rental property that, and get a 20-year loan. Now, if the numbers make sense, it has to make sense. But getting a 20-year loan, by the time you retire, you got a paid-off property. Yeah, you're going to pay taxes on it, but you're making the gain. And it's going to go up in value over those 20 years. In addition to that, here's a strategy right here that is kind of similar to what you were just saying, but it's something that I'm personally going to do. So I'm going to take my house. I'm going to have my house paid off. By the time my house is paid off, guess what I'm going to do? I'm going to go out and refinance the house. I'm going to pull all that money out. Yep. That's tax-free. So let me give you an example. Let's say my house is worth $500,000 by the time I pay it off. I can go out and get an 80% loan on that house. So I'm going to get a loan for what? What's that? $400,000? I think $400,000. So let's say $400,000. So now I got $400,000. Yes, I got a loan, so I'll start having a monthly payment. But I got $400,000 in cash, tax-free, exactly, that I can do whatever I want with.
Exactly.
That's what I'm doing with this house right now, honestly. And I'm going to do it with other properties too.
Yeah.
Hey, you got to play the system.
And that's what I mean. That's why I said we could play this game all day, because truth be told, that's a wise man said, once you become up in age and you have these properties, truly, you want to liquidate as much of the equity out of them as you possibly can. Increase your life insurance, right? So that if you pass away, you don't have this debt just sitting out there, right? The life insurance pays for that debt when you pass away, and you living with all that tax-free equity in your hand to do as you wish. Yep. That's the power of the real estate piece.
And hopefully you got your estate planning in order so you can pass that on to the next generation when you do pass, because we will pass. Everybody has a day.
Tax deferred.
Yep, tax deferred. Man, there's so many strategies, bro, so much information. It just matters, like, how bad do you want it? You got to go seek the answers, you know? So, all right, let's go. Based on your experience, what strategies have proven effective in protecting and growing your real estate investing during economic downturns? So this one's easy for me, too. Section 8. Section 8, they pay regardless. Like, when COVID was happening, guess who was paying? Section 8. Yep. When the government was telling private payers that they ain't have to pay, they can live in the house and not have to pay rent, Section 8 was paying. No experience. I mean, no issues. So that's easy. I would definitely recommend everybody look into it. People have that, they feel like Section 8 is lower quality tenants. It's what, in my experience, I've seen a range of it all. It really just depends. Some people, like, they don't want to be on Section 8. It's just their circumstances. They have to have the government assistance. They're right. Generally good people. Like, you can't just generalize one group of people just because they're on a government subsidy. So I would just say, look into it. Maybe you don't have to have all of your portfolio in Section 8, but consider putting some of it, because that's going to weather the storm, whether, you know, they lose a job or not. Section 8 is going to cover and pay you every month on the first, period.
Absolutely. Agreed.
And that I know was, you got some was, of them too.
Yeah, that was my response, because it's fixed and yep. And it's as close as guaranteed as you're going to ever get, you know? And so I think that's a phenomenal strategy, because you don't have to be concerned about payments coming to you. So, you know, you have really good clarity during those challenging times inside of the marketplace. Now, if you're thinking about, again, flipping properties and all, that's a whole nother thing. And it's hard to protect that downside. And that's a episode probably in and of itself. So the next question is around more so passive income. And I think we touched on this, but can you expose the concept of passive income in real estate? How passive is it truly? What kind of work and investment does it require upfront? There is a myth that passive means nothing, and that's not true. Now, you can get to a point where you got systems and it's automation and a ton of different things, but especially upfront, I will tell you that I was underestimating how non-passive the passive approach would be. That's what I would say upfront. And so what I mean is there's so many different ways to go about it, but truly passive would be you are buying a turnkey property from an investor that is stable with tenants in it. That's a passive income real estate strategy, right? Like, hey, super passive because there's tenant occupied, everything is fixed, everything has been done. All you are doing is buying basically a business. That's self-sufficient. Property manager in place, all of those things. You're like, okay, boom, this thing is really passive, right? But you still have some active, like, oh, hey, the tenant said this, and you know, this issue happened. Okay. So the property manager could lean into some of that. They're still gonna have to call you about these things. What do you approve? Right? How do you feel about this? Or et cetera. This happened, got this call. So, you know, that to me, it's probably as passive as it gets. But if you're not trying to pay a property manager, or if you are looking to renovate a property, refinance it, put tenants in it, well, put tenants in it, then refinance it, that is very active and not passive. So again, it just depends on the approach you take.
Yeah, so there's nothing ever truly passive in real estate unless you're investing in something like a crowdfund or a REIT or LP in a syndication, something like that, where you don't have any control, you're just a capital partner putting up money and getting a return. But outside of that, when it comes to rental, real estate rental properties, things like that, there's nothing passive. There's always going to be some kind of degree of something that you have to do, regardless of the situation. So, what are your insights on using debt as a tool for wealth building in real estate, and where do people commonly go wrong? Oh, that's a good one. I like that. I told you this on this podcast before. I feel like using debt is the best way to go because it allows you to exponentially increase your returns, right? What the question is, what they say, and where do people commonly go wrong? Over leveraging will get you in trouble. I've said this before. Debt, I heard this before, and I said it on here before. Debt buys you liabilities, leverage buys you assets. Debt buys you liabilities, leverage buys you assets. What I'm saying here is I can buy one property for $100,000 in cash, right? Or I can use leverage and buy five $100,000 properties with the same $100,000 in cash. Basically, just taking out a 20% loan on those five properties. And what did I do? I exponentially increased my cash flow by having five properties instead of one with the exact same $100,000. So that's why I'm a big fan of leverage instead of just over leveraging. You have to, when I say over leveraging, I'm just meaning like not putting anything down, getting 100% financing all the time. Like, yeah, you could take advantage of that sometimes, but what if the market shifts and your property value goes down immediately? Well, now you're in a bad spot. You're underwater. So you have to be smart about it. You know, everybody has their different risk tolerance on how much they want to put down, but just don't over leverage. Don't get too tied up to where if the market shifts, property values goes down. You're losing your shots at that point. So I love that. Greg, what you got?
I can't add to that, man.
I
You killed it.
So I love debt in the right situations. I love debt buying cash flowing assets. That's what I should have said. Let me qualify that. So, all right, last question. For someone looking to build a diverse real estate portfolio from scratch, what are the key steps and considerations to ensure success? I'll start it off. I'm sure you're gonna have a lot to add here, but you're starting from scratch. What are the key steps and considerations to ensure success? Well, first of all, I can't ensure anything, and you can't either. But you can take the right steps and operate in the right, you know, go in the right direction to help prevent any failure. So I'll say start where you know, and don't trust anyone. Start what you know, meaning like if you feel like you don't know enough on the subject, go ahead and get some books, go to some meetings, network with some people that's doing it. Just start where you're at and just get some knowledge. Then once you get that knowledge, go ahead and take the step forward and take some action. I'm not saying do it all on your own. Actually, I would say you partner, because if you're starting on your own, you don't have any experience, you're probably gonna make some mistakes. And that's okay, because you learn from those mistakes. But you definitely want to consider partnership. Nothing's wrong with partnership, especially if they're bringing something to the table. I say this all the time. When it comes to real estate, you need skills. You either have the skills, the time, or the capital. You have to have one of those three. You hope to have all three. But if you don't have one of those three, skills, time, and the capital, then you want to partner with somebody that does. So also, you want to make sure that you vet the people you're doing business with before getting started. So I'm talking contractors, realtors, property managers, anybody that's in the business, you want to vet them. What do I mean by vetting them? You want to Google them, look up testimonials, ask people that, you know them. They may be Facebook friends with, if you have somebody in common. Just do as much as you can to find out information about that person before going into business with that person. What you got, Greg? That's all I have for that one.
Yeah. You know, they say, man, you put more emphasis on the jockey than the horse.
Yep.
I mean, and that could not be more true. And if you don't understand that, look it up. It'll make a ton of sense really soon. But that's where the biggest emphasis goes. You're betting on a person, not even so much the business and the idea. Great, you want the business to be as soundproof as it possibly can. But a great plan, great strategy, even in a great market, can go south with the wrong individual. So just keep that in mind, to Antonio's point.
Yep. And I just want to say, like, I really appreciate the questions. I enjoy answering these, I should say. So please continue to send them any, like, whatever topics you have. We just want to add value. So that's our goal, is we have fun catching up once a week on here, talking to each other, but we like to add value. So we feel like we're truly making a difference. And I'm seeing the listenership pick up. So I'm seeing more and more people subscribe and download. So definitely, if you out there and you're sharing this, continue to do so, because we thank you for that. We like helping people, and this is our avenue to doing that. So if you feel like you have a question that, or maybe we didn't answer a question that, you know, we could have gotten deeper on, you feel like, you know, there's more left on the bone, send that to me. Send that to Greg. We want to talk about it, because we like having these discussions. So with that being said, we appreciate y'all. We hope to see you next week. Hit us up with any questions, and we'll holler at y'all later. Peace.
Peace.